Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween. Hello, beautiful humans. I'm Tymie Castle.
And I'm Benjamin Mead.
And you're listening to Just a Minute. Just a Minute is an educational podcast where we break down justice topics in 30 minutes or less. Today's topic, supervillains and horror movies, part deux, mental illness. Mm-hmm. Welcome back, everyone. And as always, thanks for listening.
For sure. Thanks for tuning in to part two of our Halloween special.
Part two.
And when you're listening to this, it's probably just a few days away.
Yes.
From Halloween.
Yes. Yeah. Exciting. Because we're going to re-release Satanic Panic on Halloween.
Oh, yeah. That's a good idea.
For our new listeners, since they didn't go back that far in our catalog.
Yeah. So look forward to that re-release on Halloween Day.
Yes.
So last time we talked about disability and supervillains and horror, and we're going to continue that theme today and talk about mental illness, but I do want to quickly revisit our horror and disability discussion before we talk about mental illness.
Okay, let's do that.
So in the last episode, we talked about, you know, supervillains and horror negatively in terms of disability.
Yes.
But I have read some pieces where disabled folks and scholars talk about identifying with the monsters.
Oh,
and
interesting.
Understanding their pain and motivation through horror films. Mm-hmm. So, you know, one might empathize with the anguish or helplessness of the antagonist in a horror film. Mm-hmm. And I read an article specifically where the author Matt Lee said, and this is a quote, I learned to take ownership of my mistakes and embrace my faults through horror films, to forego hiding behind a mask like the boogeyman in slasher movies. Horror demands that we not avert our gaze from the quote-unquote abnormal bodies. It challenges our prejudice, our preconceptions. These are films that celebrate disfigurement and deformity instead of shunning it. I reject the notion that horror merely co-opts disability as a cheap scare tactic. When I watch a horror movie, when I watch a scary movie is the exact quote. I do not see exploitation. I see exaltation. The disabled not as demonic, but as divine.
Interesting. Thanks for including that perspective.
Yeah, so there are lots of people who would find positive messages about disability in horror movies.
Right.
But also lots who criticize them as well.
Yes.
And horror movies also exploit and stigmatize mental health. As well.
Yes, they do.
One of the quintessential horror movies of all time, Halloween.
Yes, one of my favorites, if not my favorite.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's
up there.
I've watched documentaries about, like, you know, just how much this movie particularly transformed cinema in general.
Yes.
So it's just a groundbreaking film.
Yeah.
But it's about Michael Myers, who's a mute, monstrous psychopath who breaks out of an insane asylum.
Yes.
And goes on a killing spree on Halloween.
Yeah. Yes, he does.
Another of the most famous horror movies ever is called
Psycho.
Yeah. Norman Bates dresses up as his mother and kills the guests of the Bates Motel.
Right.
And for most of the movie, you think it's really, I mean, spoiler alert for this,
it's old 50,
60 year old movie. Yeah.
Right.
But for most of the movie, you think it's his mother.
Yes.
It actually is his mother who's killing people. But the twist is his mother's dead.
Yes.
And Norman has like split personality and he dresses up in his mother's clothes and he hears his mother's voice telling him to do bad things.
Yes.
And just like with disability, a mental illness or a mental health disorder, something that's frightening and scary.
Right.
And it makes people violent and unpredictable and makes them different from the norm.
Yes.
So mental illness on film divides us into us versus them and dehumanizes those with mental health disorders. They're animalistic or monsters who are different from us. Can you think of any other good examples of horror films or films that you're particularly fond of that have kind of a mental illness?
Yeah, so thing? I just wanted to also mention that even in Psycho, they don't actually portray dissociative identity disorder correctly. Mm-hmm. You know, he has this split personality with his mother, and that's just not like how it works. But anyway, Halloween is by far my favorite, but a more recent one is Hereditary.
Oh, yeah.
I don't want to spoil it for anyone who's not seen it because it's a good one. Mm-hmm. Came out in 2018. But a one-line plot for the film is that it follows a grieving family tormented by sinister occurrences after the death of their secretive grandmother. The husband is a psychiatrist and he's dealing with the grieving family. And let's just say it really ramps up from there. Mm-hmm.
And
don't give anything away.
Okay. who's the star of that? Is that Toni Collette?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's also like a physical disability.
yes.
aspect here too.
Don't bring it up because okay. it would be a spoiler.
Yeah. I mean, there are some things to say about this, but we'll save that.
Okay. Let's save it.
Something else.
One day we'll spoil it and talk about it.
That is a good,
it's a good
that
one.
Is a good, good movie. Yeah. But before we get into the meat of the episode, I think it's kind of important to talk about terminology a bit. So when I'm talking about, you know, mental health in class, I try to avoid using the term mental illness, and particularly calling people mentally ill.
Yes.
Because that sounds a bit kind of stigmatizing and generic. Yes. You know, we don't call people like physically ill.
Yes.
We talk about kind of all of the varieties of health problems that people have.
Specificity. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So particularly when I'm talking about mental illness, I try to use the term mental health disorder whenever possible. But in the episode today, I'm going to use the term mental illness a lot, because that's kind of how we popularly talk about the concept, and also how we think about villains and murderers as being mentally ill or having a mental illness. What do you think about that? And what do you think is kind of the most sensitive way to talk about mental health terminology?
Yeah. So I think, first of all, this is debatable. You know, there's some advocates, And we can look to the psychiatric community to see, you know, what are some of the no's in terms of what to do and what to use. Mm-hmm. So such as not using mental illness as a collective, the guidelines are use a mental illness or mental illnesses, like plural, if you're not going to be specific. Mm-hmm. So that's a guideline. Also, person first language. So someone is living with schizophrenia rather than being schizophrenic. Mm-hmm. Also, a person is experiencing a mental health condition, problem, or concern. But these sometimes change. So, you know, there's updates in thinking about language. And so these often change. Yeah. And, you know, so just check and see what's appropriate. Like you said in this episode, we're just going to use mental illness because it's commonly used in pop culture.
Yeah. And yeah, absolutely. And similarly to how pop culture and horror movies stigmatize people with disabilities, they do the same thing in regard to mental health. That villainy and evil in particular and most broadly are equated with mental illness, or that villainy and evil are a natural byproduct of mental illness.
Yes.
So think about the way that we talk about people who do bad things.
Yes.
We call them crazy, psycho, insane, mentally ill when they don't have a mental health disorder. They just did a crime.
Right.
Or did something bad. So we have a tendency and a temptation to automatically equate mental illness, mental health disorders with violent, illegal, and dangerous behavior.
Yeah, I no longer call myself a crazy cat lady. Mm-hmm. It's just neighborhood cat lady.
Neighborhood cat lady. Yeah, that's
but
good.
But perpetrating violence, even among those experiencing the most severe symptoms of mental illness, is uncommon. Mm-hmm. But it does happen. But usually there are other risk factors for violence. So that's a common myth that's, you know, the media picks up on, is mental illness and linking it to violent behavior.
Yeah, I think that's probably like deserving of a whole episode in and of itself.
Absolutely.
But it is a distortion, at the very least an exaggeration, to talk about the link between mental health problems and violence.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But getting back to super villains, Batman, who we all know is my favorite, is particularly bad about mental health. And I think I even mentioned this before in maybe like our vigilante episode.
Yeah.
But notoriously, most of Batman's foes have a mental health disorder. And when they get arrested, they get locked up and they go to Arkham Asylum. And you have a history of working in mental health.
I do.
You worked at Arkham Asylum, didn't you?
I did.
Okay, so given your expertise for today's activity, I'm going to have you diagnose Batman's villains.
Okay.
So want to play?
Yes, but first of all, I should say you should never diagnose anything based on some portrayal on television. I say this as someone who was on the subreddit for Vanderpump Rules about, and people are talking about, you know, they're diagnosing different actors or I call them actors because they are acting, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Reality show members with personality disorders, and we should never do that, but we're gonna. Okay, so
yeah, and I mean, we're talking about fictional characters,
right? These
here,
are fictional,
so we're not
fictional.
Like stigmatizing real people,
but absolutely.
Your point is absolutely taken.
Yes, okay, let's go.
Okay, Jervis Tetch, aka the Mad Hatter, he's a neuroscientist or psychologist who's obsessed with Alice in Wonderland. Mm-hmm. Although he's known for his mind control hats, he frequently kidnaps young blonde women who he believes to be Alice and makes them play out scenes from the book, especially the tea party.
Well, Well, since he has mind control hats, mm-hmm. let's say schizophrenia is a possibility. I mean, there's mm-hmm. some common paranoid delusions that, you know, with mind control and tinfoil, yeah. there's a reason that that perpetrates mm-hmm. pop culture, right?
Right. And particularly the, like, Alice in Wonderland, kind yes. of the delusions. Like, he thinks he's a character in Alice in Wonderland.
Right.
And he thinks other people are characters in Alice in Wonderland.
Yeah. It's not clear where any mm-hmm. whether any of this has a sexual component, but we could be talking about some psychopathology related to that.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about that in previous episodes. But I will say the obsession with Alice might lead mm-hmm. someone to think obsessive compulsive disorder, but that's not what it is.
Yeah, it's particularly like the disconnection from reality.
Right,
here.
Yeah. yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Edward Nygma, a.k.a. the Riddler. He's obsessed with puzzles.
Yes.
He's irresistibly driven to prove that he's smarter than everyone else, especially Batman. And he's compelled to present self-defeating puzzles and riddles to Batman that often result in his own capture and confound his ability to, yeah. to successfully complete crimes. So he could get away with it, but he has to give yeah. riddles about his crimes to Batman.
So obsession is a theme, mm-hmm. it seems like. But he does seem fixated on puzzles mm-hmm. and proving that he's smarter.
Yeah.
And they lead to his capture, which interferes with his ability to commit crime. So mm-hmm. this one actually could be a symptom of obsessive compulsive disorder mm-hmm. because he has intrusive thoughts mm-hmm. and they also compel his behavior.
Yeah. So usually people say Riddler does have OCD, obsessive yeah, compulsive right. disorder. People also frequently say maybe he also has narcissistic personality disorder sure. because he thinks he's smarter and superior to everyone else.
Sure. I can see that.
All right. Arnold Wesker, a.k.a. the ventriloquist. He's a meek and a quiet man who commits his crimes through his ventriloquist dummy, Scarface.
Yeah.
And Scarface has the persona of a 1920s gangster. And this puppet is like mean oh, and yeah. loud, and he domineers and humiliates Wesker and verbally and sometimes physically abuses him.
So, it seems like there might be psychosis here. Mm-hmm. There are auditory and, like auditory hallucinations. I don't know about, mm-hmm. Other hallucinations, but it seems like it could be symptoms of multiple mental illnesses
yeah.
at play here.
And particularly, you mentioned like kind of how multiple personality DID is yes. often disordered.
Yes.
Usually this is kind of framed as like, Scarface is one of his different personalities.
Gotcha.
It just like comes out through
just
the
manifests
puppet.
Through the
like
puppet.
They're yeah. not aware of each other. He's gotcha. Not aware that this is not a real person and that it's not him like doing the
yeah.
ventriloquist dummy.
Okay, I got
yeah.
it.
Mm-hmm.
Got it.
All right, finally, the Joker, alias unknown, is impulsive, aggressive, deceitful, irresponsible, and lacks remorse and empathy.
Yes.
He's highly intelligent and manipulative, and he demonstrates a marked inclination for and glee of violating laws, rules, and social norms.
Yeah, this was almost like it came directly from the DSM in terms of definition. Uh-huh. And we've yeah. talked about the DSM mm-hmm. before, but it's 100% antisocial personality disorder. Now, some people, they tend, as we said before, to use psychopathy mm-hmm. and that those are interchangeable. But in terms of a diagnosis, yeah, antisocial personality disorder fits mm-hmm. all the criteria.
Yeah, a lot of times people think about the Joker as being like schizophrenic or
right.
Psychotic or having delusions, but he doesn't.
Right.
He's antisocial.
Yes.
He's a psychopath.
Yes.
And see our episode on psychopaths for that. And in that episode, we talk all about psychopaths and how psychopathy is different from psychosis and what insanity is and all that terminology.
Yeah.
Check our back
catalog, mm-hmm. yo.
Go back and refer to that amazing yeah. episode.
Yes.
But it isn't just in Batman where mental illness is used as a cause or a source of evil and villainy, but in pop culture more broadly.
So tell us, how does the pop culture depiction of mental health stigmatize people with mental health disorders?
I'm going to use the Joker as particularly illustrative of this because he's kind of like the quintessential insane, mentally
yes.
ill villain.
Right.
You know, when people think about crazy bad guys, he's the first yes. person that comes to mind.
Yes.
And also,
he's
a scary clown.
Yes. So I actually am not coulrophobic anymore.
Oh, wow. You've overcome that particular phobia.
Yeah. Coulrophobia is fear of clowns, mm-hmm. anxiety of clowns, costumes. But yeah, I think the this, you know, exposure therapy, it works. Mm-hmm. You take me to the haunted house and there mm-hmm. are more clowns. And then people would just prank me with clowns, with pictures and stuff, yeah. and it's caused some kind of desensitization mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. due to exposure.
So why do you think you were scared of clowns to begin with? Why are people scared of, like, why are people scared of clowns?
Makeup, the hair, mm-hmm. and the facial features that distorts their expression, mm-hmm. and they've never looked happy to me.
Yeah,
and it's, like, really hard mm-hmm. to pinpoint.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like they have a smile, but it's like the smile is fake and painted on.
Right.
And because it's so exaggerated and distorted, it, like, looks like deceptive or fake. They're really yes. sad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There is that sad clown singer, though. He's still, yeah. I mean, he's still a clown. It freaks me out. But
yeah. So anyway, Joker's a clown.
Yeah.
And clowns are scary, but he's even gotten scarier over yes. the years. So he used to kind of be like a silly clown, like riding a rocket-powered Christmas tree, singing jingle bells, Batman smells, or like having a parade and shooting yes. poison gas out of balloons, or one of my favorite, like, cartoon episodes. He, like, used his Joker gas to mutate all the fish in the bay to have, like, his Joker
yeah.
smile.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then he copyrighted that particular fish, so any fish that was, like, caught and sold, he would get money.
Yeah.
Because he copyrighted the laughing fish. But recently, he's been more portrayed as, like, a serial killer or a mass shooter.
Okay. Yeah.
So in the comics recently, he, like, had someone else do it, like, consensually. So it's like yes. But, like, had his face carved off and then, like, stretched it back over his face. Yeah, okay. It looks really, you know, like, you got the clown and then, like, the body horror, and he's more like a serial killer. In the Joaquin Phoenix movie, he's like a mass shooter who shoots the audience and cast of a TV talk show.
Right.
But he's unhinged and he's mad in all of these different representations, which may increase the stigma associated with mental health disorders in really three major ways.
Okay.
So first of all, like I said before, pop culture representations of mental illness, particularly in supervillains and horror, imply that a mental health disorder is associated with bad behavior.
Yes.
That people with mental health disorders are criminal or violent or dangerous, and particularly that they're, like, super violent or intelligently devious.
Yes.
But as we know, and I think we talked about this before, mental health disorders frequently are associated right. with low functioning.
Yes.
Or interference with daily routines. So instead of making somebody, like, super smart and motivated, mental health disorders frequently make it difficult for people to accomplish tasks like
yes.
getting out of bed and doing a routine and following the rules. You know, whereas most mentally ill villains are, like, high functioning and sophisticated and not, like, the
right.
you know, can't function, can't get out of bed. I mentioned, like, dehumanizing before, and mentally ill villains are often called monsters or animals, or they're, like, depicted doing animalistic behaviors. And this is kind of like a subtle filmmaking technique. But, like, Jared Leto's Joker particularly yes. would, like, bark and snarl and kind of, like, move and jump around.
Right. Okay.
And there's a scene in The Dark Knight, Heath Ledger. I think it's, like, after he escapes and he's, like, driving the police car away. But he's, like, got his head out the window while he's driving and the wind's blowing his hair. Kind of like, you know, you see how a dog, like, sticks their head out the window and lets it, like, blow their ears and mouth. It was right. like, very clearly
dehumanizing. Yes.
You know, kind of a mirror image of that.
Yeah.
I mentioned Michael Myers before on Halloween.
Yes.
He's, like, inhumanly strong and indestructible. He survives bullets right. and falls off of buildings and he gets blown up and gets decapitated
yeah.
and he survives. But he's not a supernaturally resurrected corpse like right. Jason or Freddy. He's just right. mentally ill.
Yes.
And Joker, I mentioned this, I think, in our last episode, but frequently yeah. combines the stigma of both disability and mental illness. So he's crazy and he's insane and he's unstable, right. but he also has scars and sometimes, like, a twisted, distorted face. So, like, in the Tim Burton's Batman, Jack Nicholson,
yes.
you know, when he fell into the vat of acid,
right.
he, you know, it, like, yes. like, mutated his face into the smile. Whereas in, like, the older Jokers, it was just, like, clown
right,
paint,
right,
clown
right.
makeup.
It was just makeup, yeah.
But, you know, more recently, it's, like, you know, mutated their cheekbones and their smiles and stuff. And an interesting fact is, like, in the Batman 66 show, the yeah. Adam West, na 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 na, Cesar Romero, the guy that played the Joker,
mm-hmm.
you know, they got all of these other, like, they were all celebrities.
Yes.
Like, special celebrity guest stars to play the villains. And Cesar Romero, he was like a Latin heartthrob.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And he was particularly known, like, his sex symbol was his mustache.
Oh, okay.
And so he refused to shave it for his appearance in Batman.
So
you look really closely, you can see it's like Joker. He's got his clown makeup, but he has like a full mustache underneath.
Oh, interesting.
They paint his mustache white. But
I'll have to look at pictures.
But there, you know, it was just that Joker just had clown makeup as opposed to like a mutated, distorted face. And as you mentioned earlier, you know, the link between mental health and crime is not so simple and straightforward. Another stigma, a bit more implied, is that mental health disorders will spread or you can be contaminated by them.
Right.
So, you know, think about the trope, and this is common in horror movies, where people go mad when they go to the madhouse, or they're normal before being exposed to someone with a mental illness and then they become mentally ill themselves. And Joker does this directly with his Joker toxin. So he sprays you and you become crazy and you get your facial features distorted into a smile. And in the Tim Burton movie, this is what I was talking about, like the clown. Like Joker put that into all of like the hygiene products. And so there's this one funny scene where I remember it's like a news broadcast where they're talking about it. But it's like the news anchors, like their hair's all messed up and they have like pimples and stuff because they can't use makeup or hairspray.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But anyway, you know,
Joker toxin.
Yeah, he does it directly.
Yes,
but he also corrupts those he's in contact with. So Harley Quinn, was his therapist, and he corrupted and seduced her, and then she became a crazy clown too. And in Nolan's film, he corrupted, you know, Harvey Dent,
right?
Who again also became like disfigured and scarred and burned and mentally deranged as well.
Yes.
And this is used in horror a lot as well. The idea or fear that people can get contaminated with mental illness or madness.
Right.
Like a person or place makes someone lose their mind. And while we're on the theme of Jack Nicholson, The Shining is a good example of this. Like the haunted hotel makes Jack Nicholson's character go crazy and murder his family or try to murder his family.
Yeah.
And obviously you can't catch someone's mental health disorder.
No.
I mean, we may recognize that there's some genetic component to mental health. But like,
and there's documented hysteria, but that's a different conversation for a different day.
Yeah, you're not going to.
Like in terms of like people picking up on. Yeah, so we'll save that. There's a great podcast that just came out called Hysteria. Check it out.
Finally, mental health disorders are depicted as uncurable and untreatable. So the villain is at the mercy of his mental illness and can't stop himself from committing crime or from killing people. It's like an irresistible compulsion. Right. And any effort to treat mental health disorders is ineffective or misguided or misinformed.
Yes.
So like in horror movies, you have the unrelenting, unstoppable killer like Michael Myers or crazy serial killers that won't ever stop until they're dead. There's no fixing them. There's no treating them.
Yeah. When in reality, serial killers in real life can just stop killing.
Yeah, and it happens all the time.
Yeah,
that was one of the true false questions I remember from the serial killers episode.
Yep.
But think also about like Arkham Asylum. All of Batman's villains go there when he catches them. And it's a horrible place with horrible conditions and corrupt staff. And therapy and treatment are seen as weak and silly. And the villains break out as soon as they get caught. And basically the only way to stop them is, well, I was going to say to kill them, but Batman doesn't kill. He just like beats them to a bloody pulp. And this is really shown in the ending to my favorite game, Arkham City.
You've mentioned this before.
But anyway, you know, the setup is Joker's infected with a disease and he's dying and Batman has the cure and is debating whether to give it to him. And so Batman says, "Every decision you've ever made ends in death and misery. People die. I stop you. You'll just break out and do it again." And so he's debating like to let him die. And then, you know, Joker says, "Well, think of it as a running gag," and like jumps out and stabs him in the arm. And then the like medicine falls to the ground and breaks. And so Joker's like screams, "No." And he's like trying to lap up the medicine. Yeah. And obviously it doesn't save him. And, you know, so he's like laying there dying and Batman's like, "You want to know something funny? Even after everything you've done, I would have saved you." And then the Joker's last line is like, "That actually is pretty funny." And then he dies.
Yeah.
Thank you. the point is that most mental health disorders are manageable and treatable.
Yes.
Not necessarily that you can cure it, but yes. like treatment, medicine, therapies can help folks
right.
deal with mental health disorders.
As we've talked about repeatedly in our episodes. Mm-hmm. So other than being unrealistic, what are the harms of portraying mental health disorders like this in pop culture?
Well, the stigmas have real world consequences. We talked yes. about the stigma of disability and that we're tempted to think of people with disabilities as scary or deserving of their disabilities. And, you know, I'm particularly thinking about like kids who might like cry or be scared of somebody with a, you know, like a scar
yes.
or like a burn wounds or something
absolutely,
like that. Like
absolutely.
People yeah. react viscerally to people in public.
Right.
But I think there's even more of a stigma about mental illness, that people discount mental health disorders in ways that yeah. they don't physical health disorders. And I know yeah. I'm guilty of this
yes.
sometimes myself. And also a lot of people, more than half, according to psychiatry.org, don't receive help for their mental health
right.
disorders. They may
right.
try to hide them or isolate themselves from other people. They don't seek treatment. They don't
yes.
seek medication or get therapy because they're ashamed or they're afraid of being treated differently or of losing their job.
Right.
So we can all challenge ourselves to be more sensitive about issues of mental health and pointing out when we see bad representations on screen. As you said, we can still continue to enjoy these
yes.
Entertaining flicks, but also be sensitive about our language and, you know, try not to use mentally ill to describe people or to define people by their illness.
Right.
And we can think about the ways that, you know, we casually use the words crazy, psycho, psychopath, psychotic.
Yes, insane is another one. I
yeah.
would say that as a descriptor, mm-hmm. adjective. I don't use that anymore.
Yeah.
Okay, well.
So to wrap up this two-parter,
all
right. can you think of an example of a supervillain that is neither disabled or has a mental health disorder? So this was the final activity for my unit for my class when I taught that. Students had to pick two or three supervillains without a disability or without a mental health disorder and explain how their villainy was conveyed or depicted. Without a disability.
Like, I could not. Mm-hmm. I struggled. Mm-hmm. So what about Magneto? Because mm-hmm. he, in thinking about superpowers, he was a mutant supremacist mm-hmm. and not mentally ill. So, like, he believed mutants were superior. That was just his ideology,
yep.
but he didn't have any kind of mm-hmm. disability.
Yeah, I have him on my list.
Okay.
But even the ones that you pick that don't kind of have a clear disability
yes.
or mental illness, some people might object to. So, you know, like Magneto, he is a mutant. He has a genetic mutation, genetically different from people.
So
you might think of that as like a genetic difference.
Sure.
But even when you look at mutants in the X-Men universe,
right.
there are mutants who have like blue skin or
yes.
only three fingers
yes.
or tails.
Yes.
But Magneto visually presents as quote unquote normal compared
right.
to most humans.
Compared to the other mutants.
So
yeah.
I would accept that answer.
Okay, good. What did some of your students say?
Lex Luthor is another example.
Okay.
But again, some people say it's like his baldness is like a physical difference.
Right.
And it's, you know, he's like compensating for his baldness.
okay.
General Zod.
Oh,
Superman.
Yeah. Love General Zod.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He doesn't have, you know, he might, yes. he's kind of like power hungry, but
yeah,
but also aliens are kind of a cheat too, because
oh,
there are a lot
yeah.
of alien villains.
True.
But there's still visual differences,
yes.
but it's because they're aliens,
it's
not because
they're
of
from another planet.
Disability.
Right.
But any alien technically would count, any alien villain would technically count.
Yeah. So it's really mm-hmm. hard to,
yeah.
Okay. Well,
I mean, Lex Luthor, Magneto,
yeah.
Kingpin, General
Magneto
Zod.
Magneto was literally all I could think mm-hmm. of. And then I had to actually check and make sure yeah. I wasn't missing something.
Yeah. Those are yeah. the big ones.
Yeah.
Like the big villains. Other than that, you know,
okay.
your big villains are,
all right.
you know, mad or scarred.
Mad or scarred.
Mm-hmm. Anything else you want to add?
No.
Well, that means then that it's our minute to spin it, where we both give our takeaway from today's episode. So, Tommy, in just a minute, what's your spin?
This one should sound familiar. The year is 2024. Dear listener, can we get rid of horror movies where the villains become that way due to trauma or symptoms of mental illness? There are great examples of horror movies where their supervillain is a ghost, I love mm-hmm. those.
Yeah.
Right? Ben, what's your spin?
Dead and Buried.
Yes.
We all go a little mad sometimes. So that's Norman Bates.
Yes.
From Psycho, for those who don't know. What would you say is the most iconic horror movie line of all time?
Oh, gosh, I don't know.
I mean, if we're talking all time,
yeah.
I think it's alive, it's alive.
Okay.
Is probably,
yeah, it's got to be.
Probably the number one.
I can't ever mm-hmm. really guess these things because my knowledge is so like 80s focused. You mm-hmm. know, I'm always thinking about the things that I saw yeah. when I was young and were very impressionable, mm-hmm. realizing that they weren't popular for mm-hmm. other people.
Yeah, I tried to look up Freddy Krueger quotes, which I yeah. used for the spin last time, but
yeah.
you know, those weren't as like kind of iconic as I thought they would be.
Yes. Mm-hmm. They're not universal for, yeah.
I don't know if you would consider this a horror movie or not, but like, we're going to need a bigger boat.
Yeah.
That's
Jaws was a scary movie. Mm-hmm. It was a scary movie.
Yeah.
Psychological thriller.
That's a huge movie quote for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, especially this time of year, it's fun to think about spooky asylums and crazy killer clowns, and we both love a good horror movie as much as the next Halloween and fall-obsessed weirdos. But having a mental health disorder doesn't make you a supervillain or a horror movie slasher. As you
yes.
said, we need to do better about overcoming our prejudices and the overall stigma of mental illness. Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween. We didn't even talk about It.
Oh, gosh. Another scary clown.
Scary clown. Mm-hmm. We are a community-driven podcast sponsored by the Gandhi Center and produced by JMU Libraries. If you've listened this far, reach out to us on Instagram at justaminutepod_between-each-word, and we'll send you a t-shirt. Check out our website linked in show notes to see how you can support our educational programming.